We're in Philippians chapter 4. Or at least that's where we're ready to start. So far, what would you say, what have you seen, or how would you characterize or summarize or whatever what we've talked about in Philippians? Is that too broad a question, to whatever?
Yeah, because there's a lot in, you're right, there's a lot in Philippians.
Yeah.
I've had my eyes open too, you know.
Okay.
And digging in deeper, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like, well, the man, I guess one of the main things I want to emphasize again is Paul's attitude, okay? To me, this is one of the best books on attitude. Because again, he's in prison, but he's writing about joy. And he's, you know, focused on things, and he's talking about, you know, not thinking about yourself, which is, you know, but focusing on others. Okay, and of course Philippians 2, he uses Jesus' example of making himself nothing and doing all that. And so that our tendency, it seems to me, our natural tendency is to think about, all right, what's in it for me, and what I get out of this, and what's what I want, and what I like, and what. You know, whatever, instead of what can I do for others?
We gave it the office.
Okay. I'll go back then.
Come in. Good to see you.
Good to finally get here.
We
took the scenic route this morning.
You ran a little bit of the marathon.
We were talking about we're kind of summarizing what some things we've talked about here, and again we've talked about Philippians 2, but again about attitude, about looking out for others instead of yourself. And what, you know, our tendency is, okay, is again to be self-focused in terms of what do I get, what I want, what I like, and instead of Paul's attitude, joy for because of what's going on and of the gospel, and focused on that and Jesus. Being like Jesus, who made himself nothing and was focused on others, and all, and how he could serve others, you know. And to me, ultimately, that's, I guess, being old now or whatever. I guess that's one of the things I've been learning over the years is. I can think back when I first started preaching, when I first got married, and all that kind of stuff. And I could see a lot of, you know, of course I was trying to do good and doing all that kind of stuff, you know. But I also can think about how really kind of, you know, how I would look at things was still more, all right, selfish, or, you know, self-centered, or more about. Well, you know, how does this affect me, and how does this whatever that somebody wants to come in? What, you know, so anyway, it's as I've gotten older, it seems to me, I really see it. I just need to focus on, like, you guys bringing your grandkids and your kids and whatever, and trying to, you know. And, you know, trying to focus on how, you know, what can I do for them? How can I, you know, help them? I want to bring them up to be like Jesus. Those kind of things. And so you're focused. And I think, you know, as you become parents, then you start thinking about your kids and how do I help them, and what can I do for them? And then your grandkids and great-grandkids, if you have them, and all those, whatever. And you're focused on them, not yourself. Or you shouldn't be anyway. Maturity to me is when you're other-centered instead of self-centered. Okay, and yeah, Brendan.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, the first part of chapter 2 is like, if I would just read that every day, I would have, it, right after that, I mean, he says, you know, do everything without grumbling, you know, and it's like, if I would remind myself of what Christ did every day, it's a good way to start the day, because if I don't, well, everybody else around me is complaining or upset about something, right? And so I think we naturally gravitate towards that if we can, you know, even as, you know, as Christians, I mean, there's things, you know, we get upset about. I think that's okay, but, you know, there's some things that, you know, it says grumbling or arguing. It's like, oh, that's tough. But, you know, and then it's like, well, is that really, like, possible? But then Paul goes on to kind of describe his life and how, you know, well, you can make these claims, but look at what I've been through and going through. And I don't know, it's just a lot of, like you said, it's, there's a lot about, you know, Jesus and Paul and how if they went through these things, maybe I can, you know, not being under the same difficult situations, surely I can do something to build upon my faith. And I think, like you said, like, one thing I've noticed, you know, obviously with kids, like, they pick up on, you know, those same things that, you know, we're trying not to do, like arguing and grumbling, complaining. And so, you know, it makes me think about, again, just like starting the day, you know, focused on Christ, I think, I don't know, it's just different. You know?
Yeah. If you notice that, yeah, what I like about that passage is it says, if you don't grumble and complain, you what? It's like you're a star. You know, with the dark background, but you're going to stand out because you're not like everybody else. Okay, you're grumbling and complaining. And so he draws that picture, that analogy of, you know, you'll shine like stars in the universe. Okay, which means you're going to be very different than the world. You're going to be very, and you know, people will notice that if you're somebody that, you know. They just never seem to complain. They just never seem to whatever. They're different. They're something. I don't know if you think Christians are supposed to be different in the world. Okay, so you know, and if we're just like the world, then what kind of statement is that to the world? You know, how are we going to help our kids, our grandkids, or our family, or anybody else? You know, if we do that and. So yeah, that maturity, it's just really one of the things I've learned. It's really helped me to go out to His way. It's helped me in terms of when I go out there, I don't think about the guys. I don't see them as, I don't think about them as addicts. I know they're addicts and all that, but I don't see them. I just see, okay, here's a person that needs help, and so how can I help them? And I don't have to focus on, I don't have to decide, well, do I like you, do I not like you, do I like what you do, do I not like what you do, do I don't have to, I don't even view them that way, I don't even think about that. All I think about is, all right, here's a person who needs help, how can I help them? And that's, you know, and you don't have to get into all that, you know. I think most of the world reacts to, okay, well, if you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. You're not nice to me, I won't be nice to you. Kind of letting people control what we do, how we act or react or whatever, instead of saying, well, here's who I'm going to be. Doesn't really matter how you act, whatever, you're good, bad, or different. Here's who I'm going to be, and here's how I'm going to act. Regardless, and so I'm not being controlled by others, you know. You know, even in the family, if you know, if your wife or your husband or whatever, you know, says something that you don't like or whatever, well, you want to react to that, or how are you going to deal with that, you know? It's, you know, are you going to choose who you are and how you're going to act, or you're just going to, well, they said this and they did this, so I'm going to say this and I'm going to do this, and Okay, well, then you're just being controlled by others instead of saying, this is who I want to be, and this is who Christ wants me to be, and this is how I'm going to act. It doesn't matter what you do or don't do or whatever. You know, this is who I'm going to be. Okay? And but that's, you know, that's easy to say, hard to do. Okay, it's hard for us, you know, being emotional people. We like to think we're very rational and reasonable, and we think with our heads and all that kind of thing. But truth is, emotions get in us, and all of us are emotional, and we that can cause us to do things. Okay. But I, again, the attitude of Paul in talking about joy here, we when he's in prison, is again, I think a statement about that is how he's, you know, he had, I guess, and from the world's perspective, he had every reason to gripe and complain, okay, because he's in prison and he hasn't done anything wrong, okay, and yet he's talking about joy, and he's focused on how he can encourage others and do good to other people, okay. So in Philippians 4, verse 1, I want to read the, it says, therefore, my brothers and sisters, you whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord in this way, dear friends. And when he's talking about this way, I think he's referring again to chapter, the end of chapter 3, okay? You know, and talking about, you know, there would be a, keeping your mind set on earthly, you know, not on earthly things, but our citizenship is in heaven. That kind of thing, I think he's referring back to that. But he says, you know, but you see his love for him, his concern for him, and his joy, their joy and crown. I think not just at the moment, but what? He's wanting them to what? Remain faithful all the time so that when they're in heaven, okay, then that's the, when the crown comes, isn't it? Okay. Is when, you know, when you get the crown whip at the end, the result, okay? So I think that's what he's talking about, is staying for, you know, to the end, okay? So I can be, I can rejoice and have joy in you, what? For eternity, in heaven, in eternity with him, okay? Now, verse 2 is an interesting, 2 and 3. I plead with you, with Euodia, and I, you know, I'm going to say these, and I'll act like I know how they are. So, and I plead with Syntyche, and I have no Syntyche. I have no idea how to say it, but to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women, since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are in the book of life. All right, apparently, these two women in the church were having a problem with each other. And it's bad enough that Paul would, what? Call them out, say their names publicly, okay? So they're having some problem with each other. And he calls their name out publicly. I mean, obviously, if you write somebody's name down and it's, we get it today in a couple thousand years, it must have been some significance to it, okay, for him to call them out, you know, in terms of that. But look how he does it, okay? It's a very loving way, isn't it, of calling them out? He says, I plead with you to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, you know, help these women, since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel. So they're what? Everybody here is what? They're commended, aren't they? Okay, does he take sides? Does he say, well, you know, you, Syntyche, you need to get your act together because Euodia is right, or vice versa, okay? He doesn't take any sides, whatever. He just says, what? I plead with you to be of the same mind, you know. You better get together, okay? And he asks for those others to help him, okay? We don't know who Clement, this is the only time Clement is ever mentioned, and we can only speculate about who is my true companion. Who is that? Who that might be? That could be number of people. It could be Epaphroditus who's with him, who's going back. That, to me, that was the most likely, but we don't really know. It may be somebody that's already there, you know, so we don't know who it is. So you can speculate till the cows come home, but you still won't know anymore. Okay, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but he's asking them what? But what's the cause that he's always promoting? The gospel. Okay? It doesn't matter. Remember back in chapter 1, what? There were people with what? Wrong motives? Preaching? Because Paul was in prison? People with good motives? People with wrong motives? He says, who cares as long as what?
Gospel.
The gospel preached. Okay? The gospel spread. Good motives, bad motives, he don't care. As long as the gospel preached, okay? And so here, what? Why is he wanting them to get along and whatever? For the sake of the gospel, okay? Because what? It's a witness, right? If two folks are fussing, then what? That's not a good witness for the gospel, is it? Okay? That'll cause people to go away, not come to it, okay? So he's saying, quit whatever problem you got, get it solved, because what? You're going to hurt the gospel. Okay, the proclamation of the gospel. That's all. That's what's important, not whatever issue, whatever it is. It's not what's important is that what the gospel is spread, and so that we do that. And it's I don't know what you know. And again, he commends these people. See, it's kind of a he talks about the problem, but he what? He commends them for their work, and he talks about all these people whose names are what? In the book of life. He's not saying, well, you know what, you're going to be lost or whatever. He's not saying that at all. He's just saying what? You got a problem, you need to solve it because of what? It creates problems. And that hurts the gospel. That hurts people. I had a guy at his way, you know, one time, he was just telling me, he said, when I was talking with him, he said, well, I don't like to go to church because those people can't get along. Okay, well, so that's not helping him, is it? Come to the gospel, is it? Okay, so he appeals to that. You know, it's like I don't care what the problem. focus on what on the gospel, because having bad relationships or whatever hurts the gospel. I think about a church in McLeansboro. I got married in McLeansboro. My dad preached there, and I have friends there who supported us in Russia. And I go back there, and it's very close to Levon's home in Carmi, about 20 miles away. And I often when I'd go come back to make my reports, you know, about the I would speak there. They would always have me speak there. And I know some people there, and they had some years back. The elders fired a preacher, and so some of the people didn't like it. So they went and started a church, another church. This is a town of 2,000. Okay, they started another church one block from that church. Okay, so there's one church of 30 people here, and there's another church of 30 people here. Okay, well, you know, all professing to love everybody and whatever, but what's their witness to the town? Surprisingly, they're not growing. I can't understand it, but okay, it's like, oh yeah, you know. And that preacher, he left. He didn't stay any time. But they've never gotten back together again. Okay, and it's just like, you know. But it just, you know, I hate to see it, because how are they going to make an impact on that community? Because everybody, you know, a community of 2,000, everybody knows, you know, whatever. And so it just really hurt the church. And so that's. I think that's what Paul's talking about here with you. You know, don't, you know, get together because what's important is that the gospel is spread, and people's lives are, souls are saved, and not whatever whatever you want to fuss about. Okay. Okay. And then, but if you'll notice that, and again, I like what he does in 3. Again, he commends these women, you know, for what they've done in the past, you know, and he commends the other workers as well. But then he says, rejoice, verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Okay? That's a theme that keeps running through it, isn't it? Okay? Now, he just talked about what? A problem, right? Actually, Lauren thinks this, the whole book's about Euodia and Syntyche. I don't think so, but that is what they think about it. That is spoken, but
well, you
whatever.
Two need to get along.
Yeah.
In the Lord.
Well, he can take what he wants. He ain't teaching this class. So, okay, but you know, but I respect you, whatever. But it is important. But if you notice, he just talked about this a problem, right? And what's his next verse about?
Rejoice.
Rejoice. Okay. And in the Lord, always, I will say it again, rejoice. Where's your focus supposed to be?
Heaven.
In the Lord, okay? What has God done for you? What has God blessed you with? Not, let's focus on all the problems or whatever. Let's deal with what? Well, on the Lord, okay? Let's rejoice in the Lord. So, from, you know, he's trying to get the Philippians what? Focused on what? What are your blessings in Christ? How are you going to encourage others? How are you going to be an example? How are you going to, you know? But you should be rejoicing. You should be thinking about all the blessings that you have in Christ. Okay? And then verse 5, let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. And again, the Lord is near. It could be too, you know, God's always with you. Is one possibility, or the fact that, you know, in view of what? In view of the fact that Christ is going to come back, you need to be this way. And I think that's probably the more likely case. But now here's another tough one. This Philippians has some really good stuff, but it's also some really tough stuff to do, okay? It says, do not be anxious about anything. And of course, we all do that one perfect, right? But in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. Okay? Notice that what? With thanksgiving. Okay? Well, you can't do it with thanksgiving unless you're what? Focused on what? What you're thankful for, okay? Something good, all right? But he's saying what? With everything, whatever problem you got, whatever situation you got, okay? You can what? Turn it over to God, right? Instead of what? Worrying about it, stewing about it, okay? It's so easy for us to be anxious about things we have zero control over. I mean, no control, whatever. It's done. Okay? It's something. And now I know all of you have been really worried about the famine in Zambia. Right? And you're really anxious about that?
No.
I know. I said that on purpose. Okay. You hadn't thought about that? You hadn't been worried a bit about that, have you? Because I don't even know if there is one. Okay? But I'm just saying. You know, there's all kinds of things going on in the world, right, that you don't worry about. And you shouldn't, because what? You have no control over it, whatever, okay? You can't affect it in the slightest, okay? All right? And yet we worry about things that haven't happened or might happen or could happen or have happened or whatever. And we have no control over it, whatever. And yet we'll lose sleep, we'll Yeah, all kinds of stuff. We worry about it, and it doesn't change anything. It doesn't help anything. It just usually makes us feel bad. Okay, and maybe we lose sleep, whatever. But it doesn't change anything. It doesn't make it better. It doesn't help at all. Okay. But if you can turn it over, and I do this with, again, with the guys out there, we have a step on MRT where they talk about, all right, what are the things that they are concerned with, you know, and they list three things, and then what do you want to happen with those things, you know, and how does that affect your habit? And then I ask them, all right, what percentage of that do you control? Okay. And some of it is 100%. They totally control it, you know, like, well, I want to, you know, be free from addiction. Okay. Well, how much is that is on them? All of it. Okay. All right. But can they do something about that? Yeah. But sometimes they're worried about, well, I'm worried about my mother dying. Well, how much control you got of that? None. Okay. But you're going to worry about it. How's that going to help? It's not going to change a thing. Okay, so I ask them what percentage of that do you control, because I want them to understand what the, you know, what you can control and what you can't control. Okay, and then I ask them, all right, for that part that you can't control, what do you want to do about it? Okay, and of course the correct answer is what? Give it to God, right? And so they've learned that that's the answer they're supposed to say. You know, I said, well, I hope that's what you actually do. You know, it's easy to say the right thing, right? But whether you actually do that or not is another matter, okay? But, and whether we do that or not is another matter, okay? We know it in our heads, right? Well, this is what I should do, okay? But, again, it's what? It's easier said than done, isn't it? Okay? Not that anybody here worries about anything, okay?
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. I was real, okay. But he talks about that, but he basically says what? Turn it over to God. The prayer, ask him whatever you want to ask him, or pray for whatever you want to happen, because that's what I ask him. I ask him, all right, what are you worried or concerned about, and what do you want to happen with it? Okay. All right. And then, you know, if you have control or you have no control over it, then what? Give it to God, okay? But if you'll notice again, he says what? With
Thanksgiving,
okay? All right, he says the same thing in 1 Thessalonians 5:18. From 16 to 18, it says, rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus. Are all circumstances pleasant? No. Well, how do you give thanks in them if they're not pleasant?
Knowing that he's in control.
Okay, but also what? Looking for the good in the situation. All right? And so one of the questions I ask myself, because we're going to get to there in verse 8 too, is what's my attitude? Am I looking for the good or am I looking for something else? Okay. What am I looking for in these situations? Because generally you find what you're looking for, don't you? Okay? If you're looking for the bad, you'll find the bad. Take any person. Any person you want to mention. Is there good? Yeah. Is there bad? So what are you looking for? You know? Let me find the bad in this guy. Okay, you can find it if that's what you're really looking for. You can find it, but what are you looking for? The good. You can find that. What are you looking for? They had a deal. You know, somebody would come to the town and say, "What kind of town is this?" Well, what kind of town did you come from? Oh, it was great. Well, and then I think you'll find this is too. Same thing with another. What kind of town? The town was terrible. It was terrible where I came from. Well, what do you think they'll find there? Okay, same thing. So, what are you looking for? Okay, And you do the same thing with churches, you do the same thing with towns, you do the same. What are you looking for? You're looking for the good, you're looking for the bad, what are you looking for? Because you'll find it. Okay? And he says, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Now, this is the picture here is of a sentry standing there, guarding. Okay? Only this sentry is what? He says, is what? The peace of God is going to guard your hearts and minds. So you're not going to be what? Troubled. You're going to. Hey, God's got this thing. I don't have to worry about it. Okay? And I usually try to do that with things I have no control in. Okay? When I'm working with the guys, can I make them do good? No. They're going to have to decide that for themselves, aren't they? Okay? When my son was struggling, I wanted him to do good. Did I have any control of that? No. Okay? So what I had to learn after a long time, it was really hard to learn, but was what?
No God.
God, you're going to have to work at this because I can't do anything about it. Okay? Otherwise I can just, what can I do? What can I do? How am I going to change him? How am I going to make... And when he did change, I didn't do anything. Okay? There's so many things we have no control over. We just let God get. Do we believe God's working? Okay? Is he working in lives? Is he going to work things out? Yeah. So, do I have to, can I trust God or is it just me that's got to handle it? Alright? Or do you think maybe God could handle it a little better than me? You know? Hey, that's the, you know, we want to control it. We want to do everything. You can't control your kids, you know. I learned I'm responsible to my children, but now I'm not responsible for them. And that's a big difference. Okay. So you do what you can do, and the rest of it you need to turn over to God if you want peace. Now, if you just want to be in turmoil all the time, don't turn it up. You keep trying to run it. Okay? See how that goes for you. Asking if it won't go well. Right? Unless you can just let it go and trust that God will work. And he'll do whatever's best. And I don't have to control that. Okay? And in verse 8 is one of my favorite ones. It says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. What's that?
Looking for the good.
Looking for the good.
Seeing the good.
Huh?
Seeing the good.
Seeing the good, okay. But you only see it if you're what?
Looking for it.
Looking for it, okay? And all, and there's a lot of good if you're looking for it. Is there bad? Yeah. There's a lot of bad if you're looking for it. What are you looking for? Okay? Can you change, or would you say our society is good?
Yes.
You would? I would. That's terrible. Okay.
There's a lot of good in it.
There's a lot of good in it.
Yes, there is. Okay. And there's a lot of bad things in the world, and a lot of, you know, can I change the world? Okay. So I got nothing to do with it, right? No, there's something I can do. What? Can I help change one person? Okay.
You can be an influence for everybody you meet.
That's right.
You can be a shining star.
Right. You can do all those things and okay, and have an effect, an influence, like you were talking about. You can have an influence, right? A good influence on somebody, you know, and make a difference there. Okay. If you have the chance to share the gospel, you do whatever, help people, you know, You can affect one person at a time that way. You may not affect, you know, known all over the world or change the world, but you can change what? Help change one person at a time by intentionally what? Doing good, caring for them, loving, sharing the gospel, whatever it is that you can do for them. Okay? Bake a pie, whatever.
Show
they're sick.
Them Jesus.
Show them Jesus, exactly. You can do all those things, see? So, but again, what are you looking for? See, and I talk about every morning when you wake up, you got a list of problems. Does anybody here have no problems? Okay.
I don't like a list of them.
Okay, I don't. Well, that's good. But we all have some problems, don't we? Okay. But do we all have blessings? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And every morning when you get up, you decide which of those lists you are things you're going to focus on. Your problems or your blessings. You decide it. Okay?
If you're focusing on whatever is true, noble, right, that takes over. Or
exactly.
That's my goal.
Right.
So that the worries are...
Yeah.
The problems are there, but yes. The worries aren't.
Right. And that's the thing. That, you know, you will change those. You know, only God can do mm-hmm. that. But we can focus on the good. All right, who can I help today? Who can I do good to today? Who can I bless today? You know, where's my opportunities to do good here? Okay? And to me, that's what you wake up every morning. I get to do all the good I can today. Okay? Who can I do good to today? Who can I help today? Okay? To me, that's a lot better way of living. Okay? Than
the world thinks it's a Pollyanna attitude or looking at life through rose-colored glasses. But if you can't do anything about the problem...
That's one thing, but...
Yeah, but...
But if you can...
I mean, be realistic, but not try to fix something you have no control over.
Right, right. But again, that what's that going to do? If you're focused on the good, what's that going to do for you?
Give you peace.
Give you peace? How do you feel when you do good to others?
Good.
You feel good because that's what God created you to do. Ephesians 2:10. Okay, so you feel good about it. So if I'm focused on good things and who I can help and who I can do good to and all those things there for the day, each day, then what? I'm going to have a pretty good day. Okay, it's going to go well. I'm going to feel good and hopefully I'll be a blessing to others. That way, it just depends on my focus, isn't it?
Right. We'll have the peace of God.
Right. All this is about focus. It's really hard to keep focus, isn't it? Okay. I don't care if you're a basketball team, or you know, a football team, or a, you know, living life, whatever it is. It's always hard to what keep focus on what you need to be focused on. All right. It's easy to lose. To get distracted, Satan, what, tries to distract us with stuff? It's hard to keep that focus on what we need to be focused on, okay? But it seems to me that's what Paul's trying to do, get us to do here, is keep that focus, right? All right, in verse 9, I like verse 9 also. It says, whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Okay? So, is that a bold statement? Okay? What's Paul trying to be? An example? Okay? All right. Would we make that statement?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm?
I couldn't.
Why? Why?
Because what some people have seen in me, I wouldn't want anyone else to mimic.
Okay. So, can you do anything about that?
Yes.
Okay. So, but also, even in that, even when we do stuff, you know, that we shouldn't, or we're not all that we wish we were, can we not show people... teach people by how we deal with that, how we respond. So, because they're going to be the same way, aren't they? Okay, so we are being an example of what? how do I deal with things when I'm wrong, or when I've done something that I wish I hadn't done, or what, or said something I wish I hadn't done? What? How do I deal with that? See, isn't that be an example, a good example too?
Use that as an opportunity to teach them about God's forgiveness.
They, yeah, and they can relate to that too, because what? They know they messed up. If they're honest, they know what? Well, I messed up too, right? So it is being that example. But he says, whatever you see and what, he says, don't just think about it or read about it, but what?
Put it into practice.
Put it into practice. And I to me, and the older I get, the more I see that we talked about it. What is real wisdom? Okay? In Matthew 7:24, the wise man builds his house on the rock. He said what? Who's the wise man? The one who hears my word and
does it.
Puts it into practice. That's who's the wise man. Okay? The foolish man hears the word, but he what? He doesn't do anything with it. Okay? So, all the learning, all the hearing, all the whatever... We learn a lot of Bible verses, Bible classes, learn this. Great. But what am I doing with it? Okay? It'd be better if I lived out one verse than knew 100, but didn't do anything with them. Okay? What am I doing with it? Okay? And that's one of the things I've appreciated about the younger people. I think younger people that I've seen, you know, in my generation it was more pie in the sky when you die by and by. You know, you focus on eternity and all that. And there's some important things about that. But young people are like, well, what are we doing now? How are we living now? Okay? Are we making a difference now? Okay? What are you doing? Okay? You're talking about it, you read about it, but now what are you doing with it? Okay. And I think that's really important. Okay. At least I got that from the younger people. Maybe you guys already had it, but I saw that. Like, well, what are we doing? When are we doing this stuff? You know, we talk about it, but when are we going to do something with it? Okay? And all. So, I think that's real important. Okay? We do something with it. What am I doing with all this stuff? Like, if I read about looking for the good, whatever, is that what I'm doing? You know? Am I really doing that? Or I just, you know, well, yeah, that's a good thing to do. Okay? Or am I doing it? So, the important thing with all of this is what? We put it into practice in our life. Okay? Am I turning things over to God? Am I letting Him give me peace? Am I thinking, focused on good things? Am I interested in making sure that the gospel is spread? Am I, you know, what am I doing personally? Okay, that's what's important. Okay.
We need to realize too, I think, that some person I can think for us, for myself, but like different stages in our lives, we're able to do different things.
That's
like
right
now, these folks
can... Let the record show that she's referring to younger people.
Well, their family is their focus, in teaching them and...
Right.
Living for Christ,
right,
in their family. That doesn't mean they can't reach out to others,
sure,
but still, the primary focus is the family, mm-hmm, I think.
Yeah.
And they can incorporate the family into things,
mm-hmm,
like,
right,
Dole used to take Alan on mission trips,
mm-hmm,
and after Alan was baptized, he went to the men's business meetings, and he thought...
Me too.
He thought that only...
When I was 12.
Yeah.
Well, he thought that they couldn't have a business meeting without him. He never said anything, but...
Yeah. But I didn't say anything either.
But, you know, we can incorporate our kids,
right,
into things,
mm-hmm,
but our main focus should be teaching our kids.
Right.
Deuteronomy 6, 5 through 9.
Right. Well, but I still see for us older folks, I'll put myself in the category there. I see myself as being a, now it's important for me to try to train younger ones, try to teach them, share, try to help them develop their gifts and their whatever to be able to replace us, because we won't be around forever, okay? But so I want to focus on the younger ones that I can help and train. I wish I had known that when I was younger, that I would have tried to train more than I did. But,
and sometimes we don't want to be trained.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah. If we don't want to, we probably won't get trained. But for those who do, and but I think that's a.
I remember when I guess we just had. We might have had four by then, but we were at a friend's house, an older friend, and her children, her boys, both preached over in the Florence area. And her daughter was real faithful, and her son was in our teen class. This was in Baton Rouge, and we said, Sister Plunkett, give us some advice. How did you raise such good children? And she pointed to the high chair, and she said, that's where it started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to start young. Mm-hmm. Well, so, there. See, they got them in Bible class already. Okay. Asleep, but in Bible class. It's all right. Knows where to be. Okay. Yes.
One of your questions that we just went just now on is, you said, why do you think Paul refers to the peace of God in verse 7 and the God of peace, verse 9, here in this letter?
Mm-hmm.
What were you... I struggled to pull...
Well,
I guess what you're trying
to... And the peace of God and the God of peace... Okay. Well, it's showing the peace of God is what God gives you.
Yeah.
The God of peace is who He is. Okay. Do you see the difference?
Yeah, I did. But I guess I thought the question was, why does He say it here?
Okay. Well, I think He's emphasizing it on one hand, He's emphasizing our need to, you know, that only peace I'm going to get is from God. Yeah. Okay. If I'm going to have peace, it's going to be from God. Okay, that He can give me and He can guard my life. Okay, but on the other, it's okay. Do I recognize that He is the source of peace? That He's the that He and that He wants peace for me. Okay, not just but He's the one who brings any peace that we're going to have in our life. Okay, so He's the source. So both of them, if you look at it one way, they're the same. But another way, it's just a different way of looking at it.
Do you think Paul thought that maybe the church needed to know that specifically?
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe that was...
I think, that he's trying to emphasize that to understand that. Look, you're not going to get peace from this world.
Okay. I want to make sure I was drawing out what you were trying to draw out.
Yeah.
I wasn't sketchy. Some things just are point blank. This is it.
Right. And others are a little more sneaky. Yeah. Right. Okay. I appreciate the question. Thanks for
I was just gonna say one thing you said got me thinking about I guess it's been a struggle for me over the last few years, but it's taken maybe four or five kids for me to realize that, my kids are the most important people in my life right now to share these things with.
Absolutely.
And there's other things in the past that I've had to stop doing, which is, to me, is unfortunate, but I think I'm finally understanding that that is my main ministry. Though there's other things that I would like to do, there's only so much time that we have. But that's been a struggle for me sometimes. But
not just you. That was a struggle for me too. But I think that's what Drew was referring to, is we have different times, seasons of life, and different times that... so you have to focus more on something than you do something else, that's true. But I wish I would, when I was your age, I wish I'd realized it as much as you do. It's good, because I was a minister, and it was real easy for me to get focused on the church and all that, and not and not focus so much on my family, and so I think you've got a good balance there. And Drew was right about that session, you know, that season of time when that's a real focus. That's critical, because who can you influence the most? Them. All right. So that's a good thing. And is that an important thing? Yeah, that's the most important thing. So, you know, if you grow up, I could tell you as a grandparent or whatever, the most important thing to me is whether my kids or my grandkids are Christians. That's all I care about. Okay, I don't really care much about the rest of it, as long as they're in Christ and they're doing good. You know, whatever else they do, who cares? Okay, that's all that's important. And so, okay, I appreciate that. Our time is gone, past gone, and way gone, and all that stuff. But I appreciate all the comments, and next week will be our last. We'll finish Philippians 4. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.